Hello again from me, Nigel Ogden, and this week in The Organist Entertains, I want to take you on a visit to an amazing place, namely the National Musical Museum at Brentford, Middlesex. We went along one Sunday last year to join curator Frank Holland's tour, which began like this.
Well now, ladies and gentlemen, I would like to explain to you, please, how this works so that you will appreciate what there is inside the instruments as we go around the museum this afternoon. This is a single note taken from a grand piano. As soon as you press the key here, the damper is lifted off the string simply by this little piece from the end there. And then just as the hammer hits the string, the escapement here slips out like that, allowing the hammer to fall back from the string after it struck it, thus leaving the string quite free to vibrate. All the time you hold the key down here, both the damper and the hammer have left the string and it's vibrating.
The start of Frank Holland's explanation of the inner workings of a piano, which forms part of his guided tour of the National Musical Museum, or as it's also known, the Piano Museum at Brentford, a fascinating collection of keyboard and other instruments. Well, like all guides, once he's launched into his patter, Frank doesn't like being interrupted, so after the tour we talked to him in his gadget-filled kitchen. First of all, I asked him how it all started.
Well, I was always rather pleased to go into my room in Hanger Lane, put on the electric switch when I was bringing in a guest home, and the piano would start playing as we walked into the room. Then, after I spent 3 years in British Columbia, I saw some musical arcades over there, and I thought, well, when I get back to England, I will probably start a museum. Let's start the whole thing off. The rest of it, you can ask Jack De Manio about.
So, how long has the museum been open, in fact, now?
18 years, I think, and I was given this building for 2 years, and I'm still here.
Yes, and you've built the whole collection up yourself?
Mainly, the first 3 years, it cost me £200 or £300 a year to run of my own money. I thought I was going under, but I managed to pull it through, and I did most of the restoration myself then, but since then I've got a handful of helpers who've continuously helped me on and off all through the years, and now we're paddling along pretty evenly on an even keel, but it's still hard work, but we all love it.
Of course, our special reason for visiting the British Piano Museum was to see and hear the ex-Regal Cinema Kingston-upon-Thames 3-manual 12-rank Wurlitzer. For almost 30 years, the pride and joy of Joseph Seal, who retired in October 1980 as the resident organist at the museum. Well, since then, various people have played it, including David Lowe, who we invited to record it for us, and here he is playing Chicago. Back to Frank Holland. Frank, when did you acquire the Wurlitzer?
1971, we bought it. We got it here, rebuilt it here in 1972. It's a lovely instrument. The finest sounding Wurlitzer in Europe now, proclaimed.
I was reckon so. And so what do you use that for? What happened with that?
Well, I demonstrate on every tour of the museum. We finish up with that, of course, and then we do have concerts during our 7 months open period. We have 7 concerts on the Wurlitzer and 7 on the pianos.
The piano concerts that Frank mentioned involve the use of all different types of instrument in the museum. And here's an example introduced by our guide.
The player piano was contrived, I think, mainly in the 1890s in America, as well as in Europe, of course. The first piano roll was patented in Paris, I think, in about 1842, as a result of a Jacquard loom. They were working a loom in Lyon, I think it was, when it changed the card to change the pattern of the material by punch card process. That gave them the idea of a piano roll, presumably. Now, the first thing which came out was a small push-up cabinet, it was called, in Germany. In Germany it was called a Vorsetzer. And when you pump the pedals at the bottom of this cabinet, the music roll went round and it operated along the back of the cabinet, a row of felt-lined wooden fingers, which when carefully lined up over the keyboard of any piano, would play that piano. So that little cabinet was called a piano player for the simple reason that it played the piano. In about 1901 or so, they decided to extend the range of the 65 notes which this cabinet played to the full 88 found on most pianos, and at the same time to put all of the works inside the piano. There's one over there by the office, we'll play it in a moment. And that is called a player piano. Now, the other one I said was called piano player. Let's get that right. That's the first thing that they asked us to remember. They call them those names and that's it. Now, let's go over and have a little tune on this one, shall we? We'd like to come through this way, please. I think that's the best thing to do. Now, here we have a very ordinary player piano, a very fine one, but only an ordinary one, and it plays ordinary roles. About 500,000 of these were made in the two peak years of 1921 and 1923. Now, the music on here being ordinary, these rolls are cheaper than for reproducing piano rolls here because they are cut straight from the sheet music, strict tempo, usually about 2 inches per bar of music on the paper here. So when you want to play classical music, you must change the speed of the paper when you want to change the tempo of the music. That is done by means of the control down here. You pump hard on those pedals down below there for loud notes, softly for soft notes, but pumping hard and soft down there does not change the speed of the paper. That's what I want to impress upon you now. It's quite different on the other pianos over there. So when you pump hard or soft down there, it doesn't change the speed of the paper. That must be done by that to change the tempo of the music. Now I'm going to play you a couple of short tunes on here. They're strict tempo, regular tempo dance rolls. One of them is called Smiles. Does anybody remember the tune called Smiles? Yes, right. You sing along with me, will you, please? That's fine. You fix, madam. Right, can we? Let's try. Now, here it is. The words are on the paper here. If you want to sing along with me. Smile. Smile. Let me come.
Automatically played pianos are, of course, not as rare as organs operated from a roll. Well, earlier we heard David Lowe on the Wurlitzer playing live, but now let's hear a performance by means of a roll made by Tom Grierson many years ago. The title, If I Had You.
Tell us about the role, the player system, which is attached to the Wurlitzer. Because
it's the RJ, which is the junior one. The paper width is 1 foot, 3/4 inch wider than the standard piano roll, but it's still 9 holes per inch, whereas computers have 10, so we can't use that stuff for making new rolls again. And there are 105 perforations across that roll. The right-hand one plays the drums. The next four in from the right-hand end operate the scroll shutters in four different grades. And on the left side, there are three pilots. When any pilot comes up, it changes over 14 of the bass playing notes to 14 other holes in the tracker bar, and there being 14 stops to be set each time a pilot comes up.
And were you saying something about that being the only Wurlitzer player?
That's around? The only Wurlitzer automatic role playing console which was installed in Europe way back in that era.
Yeah.
And it came from the Madeleine Cinema in Paris in 1930, and it was coupled up to the little two-manual Wurlitzer on the estate of Sir Julian Kahn at Loughborough in Leicestershire, where he used to entertain cricketers and holding at that time. The little two-manual Wurlitzer is still there.
Tom Grierson's rendering of If I Had You, as recorded on a paper roll, made many years ago. Well, earlier on, Frank Holland told us that the museum acquired the ex-Riedel Wurlitzer in 1971, but it's not the only organ in the collection. Let's rejoin the tour as Frank demonstrates a Welter Orchestrion made in 1890. The tune you'll have no difficulty in recognising as Moonlight on the Ulster. And from Moonlight on the Ulster on one orchestrion to another.
So this is another Imhoff and Mueckler one. This was made exactly in 1900. This one was found, first of all, by a person who discovered it in bits on a barn floor. He took it home and rebuilt it. It wasn't playing very well when we had it. It's badly worm-eaten. The bells were missing. He had those specially made. And we had to have two new action rails made for it. It was very difficult to do. It took a long time. It cost a lot of money. It took us 5 years to restore it. It's been playing very well now, but it did get a bit difficult in that hot weather. And you must remember, of course, then, not to tighten up panels on these things in the hot weather when the wood shrinks and leaks. The orchestrelles here, made by the Olin Company, all the panels are held with springs under the screw head so that when the wood swells and shrinks, it doesn't affect the building of the whole thing. So instead of tightening up the panels in that hot summer here, I simply put a booster on, a vacuum cleaner motor, to boost it, to take care of the leakage, and we took those off at the end of the summer when wood swelled up again back to normal without any difficulty at all. We've added these figures to this. These are taken from a fairground organ given to me by my friend in Manchester many years ago. We put them on there mainly to amuse the children. And that's my family up on top, aren't they? Well behaved. Now, the roll on here is of some cakewalks, and the first one coming up is called the Crayole Bell. B-double-L-E-S.
Creole Bells, played on an Imhoff and Mueckler orchestrion. Well, so far we've heard music played on pianos and organs, but Frank Holland had another trick up his sleeve as he told us about the Violano Virtuoso.
This little arm brings the wheel down onto the string there. Here is the tremolo, which is arranged by shaking the tailpiece of the violin with an electromagnet, engineers please note. And on the right here is the bow motor, which changes in speed from 200 to 6,000 revolutions a minute very, very quickly to give you the expression on the violin. These four buttons are used for tuning the strings of the violin to the piano at the back, which has 44 notes to it, just half the number of notes on a normal piano keyboard. And since this has no keyboard, they very sensibly, I think, decided to put the bass string in the centre there, trailing off to the treble each side tonally, sort of organ fashion, giving us a nicely shaped iron frame for the piano strings. That is to say, it is shield-shaped instead of being harp-shaped. It's only a harp in a piano because you must have the long string in line with the bass key, of course. Down below here is the music roll with 123 double phosphor bronze wire contacts across the back of it. The whole thing is operated by 110 volts direct current electricity, which was in vogue in America at that time. And when the contact pop through the paper perforations, they make contact with that metal roller in the front to play the piano notes there, violin here, expression perforations there, and here is an integrating coin mechanism which will take up to 15 coins at one loading, and since there are usually five tunes on each roll, it'll therefore play the whole roll through to you three times, stop, re-roll, and then stop again and wait until you put another coin into it. Well, now I change this over from a penny to two bob. It was a long time ago. I thought it was worth it in those days. So here's a couple of bob here to play the next tune, which is number one, I think. It's where is it? Little by Little, the Foxtrot by Walter O'Keefe and Bobby Dolan. Now, while it's playing, I'll try and remember to detune it, and you'll see how clever I am in getting it back into tune in a few seconds. Where are we now? The resin's gone up again. That's fine. Right.
What? Do you mean you didn't notice the out-of-tune bit? Anyway, back in the kitchen, we talked about the collection, and I was interested to know where the instruments came from.
Oh, from garages and vicarages, Masonic halls, all sorts of things all over the country.
Have you literally gone around looking for different instruments, or have they come your way quite unexpectedly?
Both, probably. Yeah. I look for them, watch adverts and so on, yes.
So how many instruments do you reckon you've got in the place altogether now?
Well, we've got about 300 files, but for instance, some we've kept most of them, one or two duplicates we've sold to get the money in to buy other rarer ones with. But we've got, we must have working 20 or 30, I suppose, in the museum now, and the rest of them all around the back unrestored.
Ready for restoration, yes. One of the things which I was absolutely staggered to see was the number of rolls you've got here. How many?
Oh, about 30,000, I suppose. Right, help me count them.
Not just at the moment, thank you very much, but thanks for the offer. Do you know what they all are? You've got a catalogue?
All the main ones are catalogued, all the reproducing ones and all the important ones, but there's some of the lesser important ones we haven't bothered with yet.
Quite interested to see that not all the rolls will play on all the reproducing instruments, will
they? No, they all have a different scale layout, as we call it, and the book has just been written in America, to which we've contributed. We've got some rare instruments here which they wanted to know about. It's all been written up recently by Bill Edgerton, who was here 3 or 4 weeks ago.
It's a fitting tribute to the devotion of Frank Holland and his team of voluntary helpers that he was awarded the Medal of the British Empire for all his work, and long may he continue. Well, 25 minutes is not long enough to do real justice to a collection such as the National Musical Museum holds. All I can do is suggest that if you're ever in London on a Saturday or Sunday between April the 3rd and October the 31st, that you travel to the north side of Kew Bridge and walk along Brentford High Street towards the giant gas holder, in the shadow of which is the disused church that houses the museum. And it's open every weekend, April to October, between 2 and 5pm for 2 1.5-hour guided tours. And our thanks to Frank Holland for the opportunity of looking round the museum. Now, just before we finish, news of a special concert which we're presenting at our Playhouse Theatre here in Manchester on Sunday afternoon, April the 18th, featuring the one and only Robin Richmond, who will be celebrating his 70th birthday a couple of days later. Well, we hope as many of you as possible will be able to be present on this auspicious occasion, and complimentary tickets are available from the usual address. The Organist Entertains, BBC, P.O. Box 27, Manchester. The Organist Entertains, BBC, P.O. Box 27, Manchester. And don't forget to include the stamped addressed envelope, if you'd be so kind. Well, that's it for now. We'll be back with more music at the same time next Tuesday. But until then, this is Nigel Ogden on behalf of my producer, Peter Pilbeam, saying thanks for listening and bye for now.